Horace had told Frank where Carter's office was located, and Frank figured that if he was going to find Parmalee and Celina, that was where the gunman would be. Just as before, he didn't bother stopping at Sheriff Haley's office. However, Haley must have spotted him riding past, because the sheriff emerged from his office and hurried along the boardwalk after Frank.
Morgan! Morgan! You'd better not be looking for trouble! I heard what you did to Mr. Carter's men!
Sheriff, you can go straight to...
What the...
Frank kicked his feet loose from the stirrups and rolled out of the saddle, falling so that the dun was between him and the alley. His gun was in his hand by the time his boots hit the street. The man in the alley fired again, and this time the slug spanked across the horse's rump. Frank snapped a couple of shots toward the alley mouth as he dashed for the front of a building on the same side of the street. With a leap, Frank bounded onto the boardwalk and threw himself into a recessed doorway. From where he had his back pressed to the building wall, Frank could see the sheriff scurrying into his office. That came as no surprise. Haley would probably lie low until the shooting was over, no matter what the outcome. The bushwhacker had to be either Parmalee or Carter, Frank thought. He took advantage of a respite to thumb fresh cartridges into the peacemaker, replacing the spent rounds. With a full cylinder again, he holstered the gun and turned to the door behind him. He wasn't going to wait for the bushwhacker to make the next move. Frank gripped the knob and twisted it hard, throwing his shoulder against the door at the same time with all his weight behind it. Frank stepped into the darkened building. He couldn't tell much about his surroundings. This was the building where the railroad had its local offices, which meant that Carter had his office here. As Frank's eyes adjusted to the dimness, he spotted a line of light coming from under a closed door along a hallway. He cat-footed toward it, drawing his gun again. With the Colt leveled, Frank swung the door back and stepped through. The first thing he saw was Carter sitting against the wall in a pool of blood. The railroad executive's eyes were glassy and lifeless. Frank saw the moved floorboard, the empty space in the floor, and the empty canvas sacks on the desk, and he instantly knew what had happened here. Frank felt splinters sting his face as the bullet punched into the door jamb only inches from his head. In the flare from the peacemaker, Frank saw a tall, duster-clad man driven back by the impact of the bullets as they smashed into his body. Frank straightened and stepped into the office just long enough to grab the still-burning lamp from the desk. Holding it in his left hand and the Colt in his right, he strode down the hall toward the fallen man. Frank kicked the dropped gun well out of reach and kept his own weapon trained on the man as he lifted the lamp and let the light wash over the figure sprawled on the floor of the hallway.
Parmalee.
Frank realized that until this moment, he had never seen his enemy's face. Parmalee had been wearing the hood all the other times their paths had crossed.
You... bastard. Morgan.
You should have gotten on your horse and ridden out while you still had the chance, instead of coming in here after me.
Oh, yeah. I know. I didn't want to. But I didn't want to have you on my trail. From now on. Didn't want to spend the rest of my life looking over my shoulder for you.
Parmalee convulsed and pawed at his wounded chest, and a bundle of money spilled out of the duster. Blood had soaked into it. Frank stiffened as he looked at Parmalee's craggy face.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Vi Parsons. You hired out your gun to Bob Horton up in Montana when he's at war with Colbert's Triangle Sea Spread.
Yeah, that's the name I was using then. And you rode for Horton too, Morgan.
We fought on the same side. You were a good man then. What the hell happened?
Same thing happens to everybody. Time...
Parmalee's head fell back, and his final breath escaped from his throat. Grim-faced, Frank holstered his Colt and stared down at a man who had once been, well, not his friend exactly. They had never been close. But as he'd said, they had fought on the same side, and that established a bond between men. At least, Frank had thought that it did. A footstep at the front door made him look up warily. A tall man with a graying handlebar mustache stood there holding a rifle. A badge was pinned to his vest.
Don't move, mister! Looks like I got some sorting out to do here.
Who are you?
Name's Cullen Short. I'm the United States Marshal out of Wichita.
Oh, you're here already? I only sent those wires earlier today. Well, yesterday, I reckon, since it must be after midnight by now.
I happened to be in Abilene wrapping up some business there. One of my deputies got your message and wired me there to let me know to ride on over here. I just got in, and Sheriff Haley told me all hell was breaking loose. You are Frank Morgan?
Yeah.
Then I'm not surprised about all that hell business. Sort of follows you around, don't it, Morgan?
Seems to. There's another dead man back yonder in that office.
Nope. Not surprising at all.
Even though the shooting was over, the rest of the night was busy. Frank did a lot of talking. His words, along with money that was packed inside Parmalee's duster and tied to his saddle, as well as some records that Marshal Short found locked up in Carter's safe, convinced the federal lawman to accept Frank's version of the facts. The two of them rode out to Elysium, and Bonner kept his word and spilled everything he knew about the activities of Carter and Parmalee. They were able to wrap up their business there in just enough time to enjoy the breakfast that had been prepared by Mildred.
Reckon you're in the clear, Morgan.
Frank liked the marshal. Cullen Short had been a lawman for a long time, and was a no-nonsense type who believed more in what was right than he did in rules and regulations. He proved as much by telling Frank he didn't have to stay around for the inevitable hearings and inquests.
I do have places to go.
You're welcome to stay here as long as you want.
We have a lot of rebuilding to do here in Elysium. You'd be a welcome addition to the community, Mr. Morgan.
A fella told me not long ago that I didn't look much like a farmer. I'm afraid he was right.
Well, if you ever ride back this way, you'll always be welcome. There might not be a settlement here this morning if it wasn't for you.
Frank finished his breakfast, shook hands all around, and went out to find that the dun was saddled and several bags full of supplies had been loaded on the chestnut.
Wherever you're going, you won't go hungry.
Well, I'm obliged.
Frank took the reins from the man who was holding them, swung up into the saddle, and lifted a hand in farewell. He rode out with a good feeling warming him. Despite the dangers they had faced and the destruction that had been visited upon them, the citizens of Elysium were sturdy folks, the same sort of pioneer stock that had made the country what it was and what he hoped it always would be. They would be just fine. But a sense of unease stole into Frank's mind as he rode away. What had Parmalee meant there at the end, when Frank had asked him what had changed him? Time, Parmalee had said. Had he been about to say time for something? Or had he simply meant the passage of time itself, the steadily unfolding years with all their pains and disappointments, and the realization that some things were never meant to be, no matter how much folks might wish it were otherwise? Frank didn't know, and right now, he didn't particularly want to think about it. He still had that business back east waiting for him. Anyway, although a man might want to keep an eye on his back trail, he still had to watch where he was going. The fella came galloping up to Horace's house a short time after Frank had ridden away. He dismounted hurriedly and approached the porch, where Marshal Short was still talking to Horace, Mildred, and some of the other citizens of Elysium.
Is he still here?
Who?
Why, Frank Morgan, of course! The Drifter himself! One of the most famous gunfighters in the history of the West! I heard he was here. I write for a newspaper in Salina, and I wanted to ask him some questions.
I'm afraid you missed out, son. Morgan's already gone.
Oh.
The young man brightened again with the resilience and optimism of youth.
But, I'll bet some of you can tell me all about him and how he saved your lives and your homes. It's still gonna be a great story for the paper.
Frank had smelled Chicago before he came in sight of it. It was an odd smell, mostly smoky, but with some unpleasant undercurrents. He reminded himself that Chicago was where the huge slaughterhouses were, the meatpacking plants that were the ultimate destination of those thousands upon thousands of cattle who came up the trails from Texas and other places. Frank remembered reading that only New York City had more inhabitants than Chicago. The city's skyline was impressive and unsettling at the same time.
Good Lord, Hoss. Some of those buildings must be 10 or 12 stories tall. Who'd want to live that high up in the air?
Frank also had read about the Columbian Exposition that Chicago was putting on, a sort of World's Fair celebrating the 400th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's discovery of America.
Well, looks like they're having one big party here, boy. If we were gonna stay longer, I might pay a visit to this, exposition.
Since leaving Elysium, Frank had pondered his travel situation. It seemed to him that since he had given Dutton's spies and hired killers the slip down in Kansas, it would be safe for him to catch a train again. That wouldn't put too many innocent people in danger, and it would sure cut down on the time it would take him to reach Boston and finally have that showdown with Dutton.
Nah, we best head straight to the train depot, if we can figure out where it is. Hey, mister, you tell me how to get to the railroad station?
Say, are you one of Colonel Cody's cowboys?
Cody, did you say? You mean Bill Cody?
Yes, of course. Buffalo Bill himself. If you're looking for him, you'll have to go down to Jackson Park, where the World's Fair is.
Bill Cody's part of that World's Fair I heard about?
No. The exposition's planners wouldn't allow him to take part. But he has his Wild West set up just north of there. You can't miss it. I hear he's cleaning up from people who go to the fair. Been a couple times myself. Took the wife and kids. They never saw the like of it. Neither did I, to tell the truth.
Oh, that's Bill Cody, all right.
Pardon me? Didn't hear that.
What about the railroad station?
Which one? There are six stations here downtown, and quite a few others scattered around the city.
Frank pondered that, but didn't have an answer. He didn't know which station would be best. But he was willing to bet that Bill Cody would. And besides, he hadn't seen Cody in several years, and wouldn't mind renewing acquaintances. The showman could tell him the quickest way to get to Boston.
Oh, never mind about that. How'd I get to where Cody's show is set up?
Just keep going along Michigan Avenue here. When you get to 63rd Street, turn east toward the lake. You'll see the exposition on your right, and the Wild West is on the left across the street. Like I said, you can't miss it.
Much obliged, mister.
Wait a minute. You are a cowboy, aren't you?
I work some at cowboying in my time.
Have you ever killed a rustler? Or fought Indians? Or been in a gunfight?
No. My life's been plumb peaceable. All that stuff you hear about the West, about gunfights and such, it's just all made up. Things like that don't ever happen.
Really? I thought there were a lot of gunfighters and showdowns and such.
You mean where fellas stand out in the middle of the street and go for their guns to see which one's the fastest?
Exactly!
Never happened. Not once.
If that don't beat all, I'll be...
The man moved on down the sidewalk, muttering to himself. The city had opened up a little as Frank rode south. He felt better being out here than being cooped up amidst all those towering buildings. Frank saw a lot of buildings looming on his left. They weren't as tall as the ones downtown, but they were plenty big. A myriad of colorful flags on tall poles flew from some of them. Frank figured they had to be the buildings of the World's Fair. Closer, just north of the gathering of buildings, was some sort of arena, also with flags flying from it. Frank had a hunch that was where Buffalo Bill's Wild West was located. Frank reached the entrance to the compound around the arena, where dozens of tents were set up. An arched gateway marked the entranceway. It was flanked by large signs on which were painted life-size figures. Frank didn't have to guess about the identity of the hombre whose pictures adorned the sign in front of him. That man was dressed in fancy buckskins, had a rifle tucked under his arm, and a high-crowned white hat on his head, and sported long gray hair down to his shoulders and a white goatee on his jutting chin.
Yeah, pilot of the prairie, the last pioneer. Bill, you haven't changed a bit.
Buffalo Bill Cody was still larger than life, the consummate showman. He was a crack shot and one of the bravest men Frank had ever met. Cody's stories about being a Pony Express rider and scouting for the army and fighting Indians were all true. Frank even happened to know about some colorful exploits of Cody's that hadn't become general knowledge or part of Bill's stage shows and outdoor extravaganzas. Frank straightened, and his smile was replaced by a look of grim determination. It sounded like trouble had broken out in there. And since Bill Cody was an old friend, Frank was going to take a hand and do what he could to stop it.
Come on, big boy. Let's move.
He heeled the dun into motion and started past the ticket booth, trailing the pack horse behind him.
Hey, mister, can't go in without a ticket.
Don't you hear that shooting? All hell's breaking loose in there.
No, it's not. That's just Annie.
Annie?
Yeah, Annie Oakley. Little sure shot. Ain't you heard of her, mister?
No. I don't reckon I have.
Frank looked toward the arena, where the shooting had stopped momentarily, to be replaced by a wave of cheers and applause.
Well, buy a ticket and you can go in and see for yourself. Although you're gonna have to leave those horses outside. Only animals allowed inside are ones that are part of the show.
When Frank hesitated, the man went on with the enthusiasm of a natural-born spieler.
Better hurry up and make up your mind, friend. You've already missed the grand review and most of Miss Oakley's act. But you can still see the holdup of the Deadwood stage and the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
In there, you mean?
That's right. All the thrills and excitement you'd ever want.
Frank had ridden on the Deadwood stage one time, but it hadn't been held up. Hadn't been too exciting either, just bumpy and dusty. And the Battle of the Little Bighorn sure as hell hadn't been thrilling for many of those who had taken part in it. And now Buffalo Bill Cody had made that tragic occurrence part of his show, dramatizing it for the entertainment of city folks. Frank supposed that was inevitable too. Sooner or later, history either became entertainment or was forgotten.
I don't want to see the show, but I would like to talk to Bill Cody.
Colonel Cody's going to be busy until this afternoon show's over. And anyway, he doesn't talk to just any saddle tramp who comes along to beg him for a job.
I'm not looking for a job.
Listen, friend, come back after the show and you can talk to the head wrangler. Maybe he'd have something for you.
I don't want to. Oh, hell with this. I'm going in there and waiting for Bill Cody to come out.
Hey, I told you, you gotta buy a ticket! Stop that guy! He's crashing the gate!
Frank would have ignored that, too. But with a clatter of hoofbeats, several riders galloped up behind him and then circled around to get in front of him. He had to rein in because they stopped to form a barrier. There were four of them, and they all wore range clothes. Frank scanned their rugged, unshaven faces, thinking that he might have crossed trails with one or more of them, but they were all strangers to him.
Hold on there, buckaroo. You can't just come waltzing in here. You gotta buy a ticket to the show.
I don't want to see the show. I just want to talk to Bill Cody.
Well, you can't do that either. Now move along, old-timer. You don't want us to have to rough you up and throw you out of here.
As if you could.
Just who the hell you think you are?
My name is Frank Morgan.
With that, Frank heeled the dun into motion again. He was going to ride through them or over them, their choice.
Yeah, and I'm Jesse James. Get him, boys!
One of the first things Frank had noticed about the men was that none of them were armed. They were all big and burly, and no doubt experienced brawlers. But since they weren't packing iron, he didn't figure they had much chance of stopping him. His Colt whispered out of leather as they started to close in on him. The four men stopped short, their eyes widening in surprise and a little fear.
Whoa, take it easy, mister. You might accidentally hurt somebody with that hog leg.
If I hurt anybody, it won't be by accident. Now move aside and leave me alone.
Here you! Put that gun up or I'll arrest you!
Frank had seen uniformed policemen in Denver and San Francisco. They were a far cry from the deputy sheriffs and marshals he was accustomed to seeing in western settlements. This one was red-faced from both heat and anger, and he shook his club threateningly as he came up.
Holster that gun, I say!
Take it easy. I'm not looking for trouble, officer.
Then what are you looking for?
I just want to talk to Bill Cody.
He's a gate crasher, Clancy. Better arrest him anyway.
My job here is to keep the peace, not to collect ticket money for you. And my name's not Clancy. It's Flanagan. If you've got a problem with this gent, you can escort him out. But no gunplay.
Hear that, old-timer? The law says we can toss you out of here.
You can try. Doesn't mean you can actually do it.
The leader of the cowboys urged his horse next to Frank's and leaned over to reach out and grab the dun's reins. Frank hit him with a short, straight, hard right that knocked him clean out of the saddle. The other three cowboys charged Frank. One of them left his saddle in a diving tackle. His arms went around Frank and hauled him off the dun. Both men fell to the ground, almost landing under the hooves of the horses. The other men dismounted hurriedly to watch as Frank and his opponent rolled over on the ground, grappling with each other. Frank wound up on top and slammed a couple of fast punches to the man's face. Then a booted foot crashed into Frank's ribs as one of the other men swung a vicious kick that knocked Frank sprawling. Frank ignored the pain in his side and came up on his feet again, launching an uppercut as he did so.
That leaves just you, partner. What'll it be?
Well,
Now, just, wait a minute.
Hey, Rube! Hey, Rube!
That told Frank the ticket taker had worked for a circus or a carnival at some time in the past. And he also knew the rallying cry would bring more tough roustabouts on the run, all of them probably eager for a fight. Frank glanced at the policeman, who stood by with a big grin on his broad Irish face.
You gonna do anything here?
Yeah, maybe in a little bit, lad. But not while I'm having this much fun.
Frank clenched his fist and looked at the last of the four cowboys.
Come on, son. If you want to throw me out of here, you got it to do.
A gunshot froze everybody in their tracks. Frank looked toward the arena and saw a man in a fringed buckskin suit that had been dyed white striding toward them. The big white hat was unmistakable, as were the long hair, the goatee, and especially the piercing eyes that had squinted through gun smoke during many an Indian fight. He had a Winchester in his hands, and that was what he had used to fire the shot into the air. Colonel William F. Cody came to a stop in front of Frank, staring at him in disbelief.
My God, is it really you? Frank Morgan, as I live and breathe.
You mean he really is Frank Morgan, Colonel? The famous gunfighter?
Oh, of course it's Frank Morgan. Who do you think he was?
Some old-timer who was just pretending to be somebody famous.
Oh, you boys wouldn't recognize a genuine article if it walked up and bit you on the ass. I live and breathe.
He stopped short as a young woman came up and stood at his side.
There you are, little miss. I want you to meet somebody. Frank, this is Annie Oakley. Annie, meet Frank Morgan.
Frank put his hat on and tugged the brim politely as he nodded to the woman. He saw now that she wasn't quite as young as he had thought at first. She was probably in her mid-30s. But she was attractive, in a buckskin dress with an abundance of spangles and fringe, and she had an air of youthful vitality and enthusiasm that belied her true age. A broad-brimmed Stetson with a rattlesnake band studded with silver conchos perched on a mass of blonde curls. She held out her hand to shake like a man.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Morgan. I didn't know if I'd ever cross trails with the famous drifter.
My pleasure, ma'am.
Do you want me to arrest this man for disturbing the peace, Colonel?
Arrest him? I should say not. Frank Morgan's an old friend of mine.
He wouldn't pay to get in like he's supposed to, Colonel.
Oh, and he doesn't have to. He's my guest, and as long as he's in Chicago, he's welcome here anytime. Does everybody understand that?
Everyone nodded, even the battered and bruised cowboys and the ticket seller who had started the whole ruckus.
Now come with me, my old friend. We'll go to my tent and get something to drink, some cold lemonade perhaps.
Sounds good to me.
You come along with us, little miss?
No, I'd better not. Although I'd like to talk to Mr. Morgan some other time. Frank's waiting for me.
Excuse me?
My husband's name is Frank, too, Mr. Morgan.
I see. Well, be seeing you, ma'am.
Oh, heavens, call me Annie.
With that, she waved and walked off through the crowd, heading for one of the tents.
Come on, Frank. Let's go back to my tent.
I gotta do something with my horses.
Don't worry about that. These men work for me as wranglers. They'll see to your horses.
Cody gestured to the leader of the men who had jumped Frank.
Holloway, take care of Mr. Morgan's horses.
Yes, sir, Colonel.
Cody led Frank to a large tent, and when they went inside, Frank saw that it was furnished more like a house than a temporary dwelling. A wooden floor had been laid down, and there were rugs and furniture and even gas lamps. Cody opened a cabinet and took out a pitcher of lemonade.
Have you seen one of these before, Frank? It's called an icebox. There's a block of ice in the bottom to keep things inside cold.
Yeah, they got them in Denver and San Francisco, too. There's just no limit to the contraptions folks come up with these days, is there?
No, doesn't seem to be. Cheers.
Could have used one of those ice boxes in some of the places I've been, like Tombstone in the summer.
Or pinned down in a buffalo wallow by a war party of angry Cheyenne, huh?
Well, you're smiling now. But as I recall, it wasn't very pleasant at the time.
You were just a youngster then, Frank. But you already had a reputation as a fighter. I was glad to have you with us that day. We might not have made it out of there with our hair if you hadn't been. You didn't do much buffalo hunting after that, though, did you?
No, I had my fill of it, Colonel.
Well, now, you can forget about that Colonel stuff. We've known each other too long for that.
Cody sat down in an armchair and motioned Frank into another one. He stretched his long legs out in front of him.
So what brings you to Chicago? Did you come to see the exposition?
Nah, I'm just passing through, on my way to Boston.
Boston? As hard as it is for me to imagine Frank Morgan being in Chicago, it is even more difficult to think of you visiting Boston. Why in the world are you going there?
On business.
Frank thought about explaining everything to Cody. If anybody would ever understand about the need to settle a score, it was the old Westerner. But Frank didn't feel much like stirring up those particular memories right now.
When I heard you were in town, I came to see you because I thought maybe you could tell me which train to take to get there as fast as I can.
Well, of course I can. I'm on good terms with the railroads. Use them all the time to transport my show around. Now, if you'd like, you can leave all the travel arrangements to me.
Well, that'd be just fine. Much obliged, Bill.
Maybe I could prevail on you not to be in such a big hurry to leave Chicago, Frank. To tell you the truth, now that I see you, it occurs to me that you could do me a tremendous favor and really help me out with a problem that I have.
Frank hesitated in answering. He and Cody went back a long way, and normally he wouldn't hesitate to do anything he could to help the showman. But he felt the press of vengeance that had been long denied.
As long as it doesn't take too long, I might consider it.
Oh, it shouldn't take very long for you. I just want you to kill someone, that's all.
While Frank stared at Cody, dumbfounded by the old showman's statement, Cody waved a hand and went on.
Well, now maybe that's probably put a mite too strongly. While I'd certainly like for you to kill this individual, that might not be necessary. He might back down when he realizes that he's facing one of the deadliest gunfighters in the history of the West.
Save that kind of talk for your show. What's this all about, Bill? I've known you for a long while, Bill. It must be something very serious for you to even consider asking for help. You've always been the sort of hombre that stomped his own snakes.
Well, you see, there's this young lady.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me, Bill.
Now hold on, Frank. Let me finish.
I don't like to get mixed up in anybody's personal life, Bill.
And it's nothing like that, I swear. The girl's name is Hannah Sterling, and she's in the show. Does an equestrian act. Trick riding.
I'm familiar with the word.
Yeah, of course. I'd forgotten how you were always reading. Still carry a book or two in your saddlebags all the time.
Go on with what you're telling me.
Yeah. Well, Hannah's from Arkansas. Fort Smith, to be precise. And one reason she left her home and joined up with my show was that she wanted to get away from a fellow who was smitten with her. A man named Wade. Edgar Wade. Ruffian from over in Indian Territory. From what Anna tells me, he was suspected of rustling, selling whiskey to the Indians, but Judge Parker's deputies were never able to get the proof they needed to arrest him.
Frank knew that the deputies who worked for Judge Isaac Parker, the famous hanging judge, were highly capable manhunters for the most part. If Edgar Wade had been able to elude their justice, he was tough or lucky or both.
Let me guess. Wade still wants the girl, so he's followed her up here to make trouble for her. And you.
Yeah. And he's brought some of his outlaw friends from the territory with him. Now, naturally, since I look on all the performers in my show as my children, I want to protect Hannah from him.
Frank suspected that maybe there was more to it than that. The fact that Cody had said first that he wanted Frank to kill Edgar Wade indicated a little deeper attachment between Cody and Hannah Sterling than just the impresario of a show looking out for one of his performers. But that didn't have anything to do with the fact that Cody had trouble on his hands and he had asked Frank for help.
How about it, Frank? Can Boston wait?
Boston wasn't the issue. Frank wondered whether his hatred for Charles Dutton could wait a few more days.
I reckon I could have a talk with this Wade fella. That shouldn't take too long. And then I can be on my way.
Oh, I can't thank you enough, Frank. Now, come on, I'll take you over to Hannah's tent and introduce you to her.
The arena, with its tall grandstands, rose to the left as Cody led Frank through the compound. There were dozens of tents for the performers, as well as corrals for the horses. A Concord stagecoach, painted a bright red and yellow, rattled past the two men, swaying on the broad leather thoroughbraces that supported it. A bearded man in a buckskin vest, flannel shirt, and battered old hat with the front brim turned up was on the driver's box, handling the team with an expert touch that spoke of long experience. He waved a gauntleted hand at Frank and Cody as he drove past.
Hey, was that old Salty?
Yeah, it sure was.
Oh, good Lord, I figured he was dead 10 years ago.
Not Salty. He's been whittled down to bone and wang leather, but I figure he'll still be around when you and I are in our graves, Frank.
Could be. He drove the actual Deadwood run back in 76, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right, as well as other routes all over the West. I couldn't have a better man handling that stagecoach.
The compound was thronged with people, many of them members of Cody's troupe of performers, but quite a few people who had attended the afternoon show were still on the grounds, wandering around and looking at the horses, the cowboys, and the Indians. One of the red men greeted Frank with an upraised hand.
How?
How yourself, you old son of a bitch. It's good to see you, Red Thunder. I didn't know you were part of Bill's show.
Well, I was never able to take his hair, so I thought I might as well take his money.
Red Thunder's easy, educated manner of speaking showed that he'd had some of the white man's schooling.
It wasn't through lack of trying that you never got my hair. I recollect a time when we were both young and you and some of your braves chased me a good 20 miles before I gave you the slip.
Those Pony Express horses were fast, but we might not have killed you if we'd caught you. Would have stolen your horse, though.
Well, that goes without saying.
What are you doing here, Frank? Come to join up with the show? The Colonel doesn't pay all that well, but it's good to remember the old times.
No, I'm just paying a quick visit.
You ought to think about joining up. Lots of old friends here.
Oh, that's actually not a bad idea, Frank. You could be quite a draw. I can see it now. Frank Morgan, the last of the old-time gunfighters. I've been thinking about just such a thing for a long time.
Let me guess. You already asked Smoke Jensen, and he turned you down.
Well, now, Frank, that thought never even occurred to me.
Sorry, Bill. Like I told you, I have business elsewhere.
Well, keep it in mind for when that business is concluded satisfactorily, as I'm sure it will be.
See you two later. I have to go practice my savage war cry.
Exactly when is the next train heading east due through here? Tomorrow or the next day, I hope.
Frank, there's at least 2 eastbounds leaving Chicago each and every day. This isn't some isolated little flag stop out in the middle of the frontier. Chicago is the greatest rail hub in the country, maybe even the world. Whenever you're ready to go, you should not have to wait very long for a train.
Frank was ready to go now, but he had promised Cody that he would give him a hand with the problem facing him. He was going to do his best to take care of it quickly, though. They walked on to another tent, where Cody paused outside the entrance flap.
Hannah, it's a colonel. I have a friend of mine with me. Can we come in? That's odd. I'm sure she was coming right back here after the performance.
Frank didn't wait to see what Cody would do. He jerked the canvas entrance flap aside and lunged into the tent with his hand on the butt of his peacemaker. Instantly, Frank's keen eyes caught the sight of 2 figures struggling next to a folding table. One of them was a young woman in tight buckskin trousers and a fancy white shirt. The other was a tall man in a western cut suit with a black Stetson crammed down on a shock of black hair. The man had his back to Frank at first, but must have heard him come in because he swung around sharply, bringing the young woman with him. Frank let go of his gun since he couldn't fire as long as the woman was between him and the intruder. After hearing Cody's story, he had no doubt that the woman was Hannah Sterling, and the man with the arrogant snarl on his face was Edgar Wade.
Get out of here, mister. I don't know who you are, but this is none of your business.
That's him, Frank. That's Wade.
You get out too, Cody. You got no right interfering between a man and the woman he's gonna marry.
Frank, no!
You bit me!
Wade reached for her with a hand that was now dripping blood where she had bitten him. He didn't get a chance to lay that bloody hand on her. Frank stepped forward quickly and launched a punch that landed cleanly on that crooked, hawk-like beak. Frank bored in, hooking a left into Wade's midsection. Wade was several inches taller than Frank, so that brought him into perfect position for a looping right-hand punch to his jaw. Wade was driven sideways onto the folding table. It collapsed under his weight, and he fell to the ground amidst the wreckage, where he lay, moving feebly, as crimson leaked from his rapidly swelling nose. Frank moved back and stood with his hand near the Colt, just in case Wade tried anything. From the looks of the man, though, All the fight had been knocked out of him.
There, there, Hannah. It's all right. That ruffian isn't going to hurt you again.
Hannah swallowed hard and made a visible effort to pull herself together. She was a tall, athletic-looking young woman, almost as tall as Frank and Cody, and she had long, thick, dark red hair that was pulled into a ponytail behind her head. Frank glanced over at the two of them, saw how pretty Hannah was, and saw as well how Cody was hovering protectively over her. He thought again that the showman's feelings for the lovely young trick rider probably weren't strictly avuncular, but he also reminded himself that that was none of his business. Frank bent over, grabbed the lapels of Wade's coat, and hauled the man to his feet.
Listen to me, Wade. You're not welcome here, and you're not going to bother this young woman anymore. Set foot in this compound again, you'll get worse than you got this time.
You got no right to keep me out. This is a public show. I got a right to buy a ticket.
Not if I say you don't. This is my show, and I say who's welcome and who's not.
Frank gave Wade a shove that sent him staggering toward the entrance.
Get the hell out of here, and don't come back.
Wade paused before leaving the tent to draw the back of his hand across his mouth and wipe away some of the blood that had run down there.
Who are you? One of Cody's phony cowboys?
There's nothing phony about this man, you damn fool. This is Frank Morgan.
Frank could tell from the look in Wade's eyes that the man recognized his name. Wade didn't show it in any other way, though.
You'll be a dead man if he ever tries to lay hands on me again.
Wade pushed out of the tent and stalked away unsteadily. Frank stepped to the entrance and watched him go, just to make sure he didn't try to double back. People stepped aside from Wade and gave him plenty of room, probably because of that savage, blood-streaked countenance.
Are you really Frank Morgan?
Yes, I am. And I'm pleased to meet you, Miss Sterling. I wish it had been under better circumstances.
So do I. I wish you hadn't been forced to cross Edgar. He's a bad man to have as an enemy.
I don't reckon I'll lose much sleep worrying about that, ma'am.
And I wish I hadn't brought so much trouble to the show, Colonel.
Now don't you give it a second thought. Wade won't dare bother you again, not after what happened just now.
That's where you're wrong, Colonel. When Edgar wants something, he won't stop until he gets it. He'll be more determined than ever after this. And sooner or later, I'll have to go with him, whether I want to or not.
Never. Never. Why in the world would you say a thing like that, girl?
Because I promised that I'm going to marry him.
Marry him? Why in God's name would you ever do a thing like that?
Because it's what I promised to do. I gave my word, and I have to keep it.
But why?
Why does anyone agree to get married? I guess I love him.
Frank was watching Hannah Sterling closely, and he didn't believe for a second that she really loved Edgar Wade. She was sincere about intending to honor her promise to marry him, though.
You don't have to do anything you don't want to. Colonel Cody and I will see to that.
I know. It's just... I'm sorry. You wouldn't understand.
No, I sure as blazes don't.
I appreciate what you did, Mr. Morgan, but it doesn't change anything. I still have to marry Edgar.
Hannah, you aren't... You haven't, You're not in a condition.
Oh, no, Colonel. I never... I wouldn't.
There, there, my dear. Of course not. I shouldn't have even allowed such a thought to enter my head. But if it's not that, you must have some other reason.
I told you. I love him.
Oh, Hannah, I just don't see
where... You heard the lady, Bill. You know there's no point in arguing with a woman once she's made up her mind.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. I'm glad you understand.
Well, I still don't want Wade anywhere around here. If you have to meet him, it'd better be elsewhere.
All right, Colonel. I know the hotel where he's staying. That's where he was trying to get me to go just now. I guess I should have gone along with him, instead of causing so much trouble. I'm sorry.
There's no need to apologize. I may not understand, but I won't interfere. We'll go on now and leave you alone. I'm sure you'll want to rest up a mite before tonight's show. You going to be able to perform?
Of course. I won't let my personal affairs interfere with the show.
Good. Let's go, Frank.
It is mighty nice to meet you, Miss Sterling.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
Not much to understand about it. She lied to us.
What do you mean?
That gal's not in love with Wade. For some reason, though, she thinks she's got no choice but to go along with what he wants and marry him. She just panicked when he tried to force her to leave just now. But that doesn't change whatever hold it is that he has over her.
Oh, I knew it! I knew she couldn't possibly be in love with that son of a bitch! What are we gonna do about this, Frank?
You're gonna keep on running your show the way you always do. Leave the other to me. I'll find out how Wade is forcing her to go along with him, and then I'll take whatever steps are necessary to put a stop to it.
Thanks, Frank. Now, that girl means a lot to me. Like I said at first, maybe you should just kill the bastard.
Might just come to that.
After leaving the fair, Frank and Cody went to a fine restaurant not far away where they ate supper. Cody insisted on paying.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, your money's no good while you're in Chicago, Frank. I've done very well financially since setting up my Wild West show, and I was successful before that with my stage productions.
Yeah, I remember Bill Hickok telling me about trying to be an actor in one of your plays. He didn't care much for it, as I recall. Lord, it's hard to believe Wild Bill's been gone almost 20 years now.
Yes, he was a good man. Never should have gone to Deadwood, though. I was scouting for the army at the time and tried to talk him into coming along with me. But he was set on prospecting for gold and making a fortune. Funny thing is, I've heard that once he got there, he gave up on the idea of prospecting and spent most of his time drinking and gambling in the saloons.
They shared a moment of silence in memory of their old friend Hickok, then resumed their reminiscing over a meal of what Cody proclaimed to be the finest steaks in Chicago.
Well, now that was sure tasty. But I'd better get back so I can start preparing for this evening's performance. Now, you're coming to see the show, aren't you, Frank?
Well, sure am. I'm curious to see just what sort of hoopla you put on, Bill.
Frank had another reason for attending the performance, too, but he didn't say anything about that to Cody. Better to wait and see how the hand played out, he thought.
Wonderful! You'll sit in my private box right down front. That is, if I can't talk you into taking part, even if it's just for one night.
No, thanks. Just how many people can you pack in that place, Bill?
18,000.
I reckon I'd take on a horde of howling Comanche before I'd feel comfortable performing in front of 18,000 people.
Oh, you'd be surprised how quickly you get used to it.
I'll take your word for it.
Frank sat in Buffalo Bill's private box at the arena that evening. Half the sky was still lit up with the afterglow from the sunset, but above the arena, gas lights mounted on towering poles began to flicker on. There were so many of them that by the time they were all lit, it was as bright as day inside the arena. The stands began to fill up quickly. Many of those attending were families with young children, but Frank also saw couples who were probably courting or newly married, and older people who might well remember when some of the things they were about to see were commonplace. Frank watched in wonder as the excitement built to a frenzy with the anticipation of seeing the famous Buffalo Bill Cody. Then a huge cheer welled from the 18,000 throats. The cheering continued as Buffalo Bill rode out into the center of the arena on a beautiful white horse rigged up with silver trappings on its harness. Cody rode around in a circle, waving his creamy Stetson over his head and saluting the crowd.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Buffalo Bill's Wild West and Congress of Rough Riders of the World. And now, the Grand Review!
With a sweep of his hat, he ushered a column of riders into the arena. Riding four abreast, cavalrymen from numerous different nations paraded slowly before the grandstands full of cheering spectators. Each group carried a flag representing its country. The Grand Review lasted for quite a while.
Now, my friends, I know you've been waiting for this. Please welcome Little Sure Shot, the darling of the plains, Annie Oakley!
Yeah!
She was a mighty good shot, no doubt about that. Frank had to give her credit for her undeniable skill with pistol and rifle. She made some shots he doubted that he would have been able to accomplish. There was no trickery about it, no gimcrackery. Annie Oakley was the genuine article.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for Annie Oakley!
That was hardly the end of the show. The Deadwood stage appeared next, with old Salty Stevens handling the reins. After the coach had made a complete circuit of the arena, a group of riders suddenly came boiling out of one of the gates that led underneath the grandstands. They wore buckskins and feathered headdresses, and they howled and whooped savagely as they gave chase to the stagecoach. Salty whipped up the team to a gallop. The attacking Indians opened fire with the rifles they carried. The chase lasted for a couple of turns around the arena before a group of cowboys led by Buffalo Bill appeared on the scene, racing after the Indians and shooting at them. Some of the Indians went tumbling spectacularly off their mounts as if they were mortally wounded. It was a window into a history that was not completely gone yet, not by any means, but one that was beginning to fade. A little later in the show, Hannah Sterling appeared, riding a big bay horse. She wore the same outfit Frank had seen her in earlier, with the addition of a buckskin jacket and a white Stetson. When she launched into her first trick, Frank thought for a second that she had fallen off the running horse. But then she popped back up, and he realized that she had slipped out of the saddle, let her booted feet hit the ground, and then vaulted back up, using her tight grip on the saddle for leverage as she swung her legs across the horse's back and let them drop on the other side. That was just the beginning. Before the act was over, Hannah had ridden backward, upside down, standing on the saddle, and every other which way. Frank had seen other performers who could carry out such horseback tricks, but he had to admit that Hannah was as good as any of them, and better than most.
Hannah Sterling, ladies and gentlemen!
When Hannah had finished her act, Colonel Cody returned to the arena to do some sharpshooting of his own, which he combined with a demonstration of fancy horsemanship. Frank would have enjoyed watching his old friend perform, but he had other business to take care of. He needed to follow Hannah and hopefully find out just what kind of hold Edgar Wade had over her and why she was lying to the colonel about it. Frank had followed Hannah back to her tent. A short time later, Hannah came back out, having changed into a simple but attractive dress. Her long red hair was put up on her head with a stylishly small hat perched on it. Being careful to stay in the shadows, Frank followed Hannah as she walked several blocks to the Avalon Hotel on the lakefront. Frank had given Hannah a moment or two, not wanting to follow too closely behind her, then went into the hotel himself. He realized as he entered the lobby that he looked out of place in his range clothes. All the other men he saw wore suits, and some of them sported derbies or bowler hats or fedoras. Frank couldn't worry about that now. He caught sight of Hannah's skirts ascending a staircase on the other side of the lobby. As he started after her, the slick-haired gent behind the registration desk held up a hand.
May I help you, sir?
No, thanks.
Just a moment, sir!
Frank turned his head toward the young man, and the clerk shut up when he saw the expression on the drifter's rugged face.
It's all right, son. If there's a ruckus, I'll tell everybody afterward that it wasn't your fault, that you tried to stop me.
Is there going to be trouble, sir?
I reckon that'll depend on what I find when I get upstairs.
Without another word, Frank hurried along to the staircase and bounded up the steps. When Frank reached the second floor landing, he glanced along the hall and then pulled back sharply so that Hannah wouldn't see him. She was standing in front of a door about halfway along the corridor, in a pose that told Frank she had just knocked on the panel and was waiting for a response. Just when Frank was beginning to wonder if Hannah was going to get any answer to her knock, the door slowly swung open. A slender, stooped, gray-haired man stood there, his face haggard. But a smile appeared on it as he saw Hannah, and he held out his arms to her. The two of them embraced tightly, and then with an arm around her shoulder, the old man took Hannah into the room and closed the door behind them.
What the hell?
He walked quietly along the hallway until he came to the door. The number on it was 214. Frank leaned closer, his broad-brimmed hat in his hand, and pressed his ear to the panel. The door of another room opened, and a heavy-set gray-haired woman in late middle age stepped out wearing a fancy dress and a plumed hat. Frank straightened, put his hat on, and gave the brim a polite tug as he nodded to the woman.
Ma'am?
Sir, if you're going to lurk around hotel corridors, I shall have no choice but to report you to the police.
Frank didn't want the woman raising a ruckus. He moved a few steps closer to her, and she recoiled a little, clutching her handbag tighter.
I'm not lurking, ma'am. I'm looking for my sister. You happen to know who's staying in room 214?
I do not. Perhaps you should inquire at the desk downstairs.
Yes, ma'am. I suppose that'd be best. If you're going down to the lobby, I'd be glad to escort you.
I suppose that would be all right. Are you a cowboy?
Yes, ma'am.
From Texas?
As a matter of fact, I was born and raised there, ma'am. But I drifted around a heap of other places, too.
You should go see Buffalo Bill's Wild West. It's positively thrilling. I'm certain you'd enjoy it.
I'll sure think about doing that.
They reached the bottom of the stairs, and Frank hoped the woman would go on so that he wouldn't have to continue this charade. Before he could do anything else, though, four men in range clothes came through the front doors of the hotel.
There you are, Morgan. We got a score to settle with you, mister.
As the four men started across the lobby toward Frank, he recognized them from the fracas at the Wild West show compound earlier in the day. The one in the lead, the one who had spoken, was the wrangler called Holloway.
Hold on, Holloway. I'm not looking for trouble with you boys.
Well, that's just too damn bad, Morgan. Because we're looking for trouble with you. And you can't scare us off with that cold either, gunslinger. This here's Chicago. It's a civilized town. And you'll wind up in jail if you slap leather, especially against unarmed men.
Gunslinger?
But don't worry, ma'am. A Wild West show's not about to break out right here in the lobby. Let's take this outside, boys.
That's fine with us. But you go first, Morgan. We don't want you trying to duck out on us.
Should I summon the police, sir?
No thanks, ma'am. I won't need any help to handle the likes of these hombres.
We'll see about that, Morgan.
There was a small park across the street from the hotel, along the waterfront of the lake. Light from several gas street lamps reached the edges of the park, so Frank headed for it, thinking the open space would give him room to move around. When he reached the park and turned back toward the hotel, he saw that the older woman, the desk clerk, and several other men who had been in the lobby had come outside to watch the fracas.
You ready for a whipping, Morgan?
If you think you can do it, you've got it to do. You got the odds on your side, that's for sure. 4-1 might be enough to give you an advantage.
These boys just came along in case you tried anything underhanded. I'm gonna thrash you all by my lonesome, old man.
Then maybe one of them wouldn't mind holding my gun belt for me.
I'll take it. Looks like I'll be staying out of this, Morgan.
Your word on that?
Sure.
Good enough for me, then. You mind holding my hat, too? I'll be needing it after I dispose of your friends here. And I hate it when my hat gets dirty.
Morgan, either you're stupid or you're the most confident man I've ever met. Either way, I promise your hat will stay clean.
Thanks. All right, let's get to it.
I'll try not to hurt you too bad, old man. Just bad enough you'll be sorry you ever laid eyes on me.
Well, too late. I already am.
Holloway threw a wild right, and as Frank moved to his right to avoid it, Holloway's left came hooking up with blinding speed. Frank was just as fast, though. He blocked Holloway's left with his right forearm and jabbed his own left into the wrangler's belly, which was unprotected at the moment.
Should I call the police?
Frank's fist sunk in Holloway's gut almost to the wrist. Before Holloway could catch his breath or his balance, Frank smashed a right cross to his face. The punch sent Holloway staggering across the grass.
Oh, someone should stop this!
That's a pretty good punch for an old man.
More where that came from.
Yeah, I'll just bet there is.
Holloway came toward Frank again, but this time the wrangler's approach was slower and more careful. The two men sparred, feeling each other out now. At the same time, Frank was trying to keep an eye on the hotel entrance in case Hannah came out. He wasn't sure what he would do if she emerged from the hotel while he was still busy with Holloway, but he would deal with that when and if it happened. Unfortunately, the distraction proved to be just enough to let Holloway get too close. Holloway's right fist suddenly snapped out and connected solidly with Frank's jaw. The impact rocked Frank's head back and made him take a step backward. As he did so, Holloway hooked a toe behind his heel and jerked. Frank's leg went out from under him. Instantly, Holloway abandoned his boxing strategy and leaped after Frank, obviously intent on pinning him to the ground. Frank saw him coming and rolled aside. Frank drove an elbow into his ribs. Somehow, Holloway reached out and grabbed hold of Frank. They rolled across the grassy parkland, wrestling furiously. When they finally came to a stop, Frank was on top. Frank hit Holloway with a right and a left that jolted the wrangler's head one way and then the other. Half stunned, Holloway still managed to get a leg up and hook it across Frank's throat. He levered Frank off him and rolled the other way.
Get him! Get the old bastard!
So much for fair play, huh?
Frank was able to duck the punch that the first one threw at him. But the second man landed a fist in Frank's side. Frank counterpunched and caught the man on the chin. That gave him an instant's respite, but that wasn't long enough to allow him to twist away from his attackers. A punch exploded on Frank's jaw, sending him reeling to the ground. Before he could get up, the two men had closed in on him again and reached down to grab his arms. They jerked him onto his feet. Holloway got up and came toward them, his face contorted in an expression of savagery.
Now you're gonna pay, Morgan.
Frank knew good and well what was about to happen. Holloway intended to give him a beating while the other two men held him.
I don't know about this, Jed. It don't seem right.
Shut up! You don't have to do anything. You can walk away if you don't have the stomach to watch.
We should get out of here. I think some of those folks over at the hotel might have gone back inside to call the police. Besides, it looks like he's out cold to me.
Frank had been standing there in the grip of the two men with his head hanging down, as if he were stunned. Now, as Holloway approached him, he decided that he didn't have any more time to waste waltzing around with these Jaspers. Frank lifted his head and threw his weight against the two men holding him. He lifted both feet off the ground and brought his knees up almost to his chest before he straightened his legs and kicked Holloway in the chest. The unexpected weight threw the men holding Frank off balance. The grip one of them had slipped loose. Frank pivoted toward the other one, bringing his free arm whipping around so that his fist landed in a sledging blow to the side of the man's head. The Wrangler dropped like a pole-axed steer. Frank whirled around just as the remaining man leaped toward him. His fist came up, ready to strike. But before Frank could throw a punch, the man who was lunging at Frank was thrown backward as the meaty impact of a bullet striking flesh sounded. The Wrangler who had been shot was on the ground, writhing in pain from a bullet-shattered shoulder.
Throw me my gun!
Huh?
My gun! Now!
The man holding the Colt gave a little shake of his head, breaking out of his stunned reverie, and tossed belt and all across to Frank.
I just saw the muzzle flash in those trees, Morgan.
I see him.
The shots were coming from some trees deeper in the park. Frank lifted the gun and smoothly squeezed off two shots, aiming at the spot where orange flame had bloomed in the darkness.
He's getting away!
Get something on your friend's shoulder to stop the bleeding.
Frank darted into the trees in pursuit of whoever had taken those cowardly shots at him. The sound of the running footsteps led him through the park at an angle. When he came back to the curving street, he spotted a man in a broad-brimmed hat running through the light cast by a gas lamp. Frank lifted the Colt to take a shot at him, intending to aim low and knock a leg out from under the fleeing bushwhacker. But at that moment, one of the electric trolley cars came rattling past, blocking his view of the man. When the trolley was clear, the bushwhacker was gone.